Awesome. Thank you, Lissa. Hi, everyone. Welcome into LH1 Live. It is August edition. My name is Jessica. I am your host for the most, and really excited for this call. I always look forward to LH1 Live calls. There's so many great topics and things that we discuss and share here. And so today is nonetheless just absolutely fantastic. Excited for it. A couple quick housekeeping things to share. Linda kind of got us all prepped for it, but if you are on your phone, we do have a ton of new people who kind of rejoining us. So just want to kind of go over quick housekeeping. Star six is to mute, unmute if you are calling in on your phone. So please make sure you're doing that. Most importantly, we definitely want you to mute yourself just because if we have to mute you, it's harder for you to unmute, or actually you're unable to unmute yourself. So it's kind of trickier to be able to jump in and ask questions. I think one of the most important things too is that we have awesome topics. Well, I'm biased. We have awesome topics all throughout the year with LH1 Live, but most importantly, this is your call. So we want to make sure that you can get off mute, jump in, ask a question. And so if you are in a noisy place or watching that Phillies game, please just be aware of your volume. But when the time is most appropriate, please jump in and ask questions and say hello, or especially of the various topics that we're going to have today and throughout the year. And so a couple things. We'll have a quick shout out before we kind of dive in, and then we'll jump into the main topic of event. And then, of course, at the end of the call, we will kind of talk through all the calls that are happening for the month of August that are coming up, just so everyone can get them on their calendars and plan accordingly. So I'll jump right in. I'm going to pass it to Melinda. She has a quick announcement for us.
I do. Jessica, could you just let me know, has Zoe, our intern, arrived today
Yes,
yet?
I don't know. Yes,
Oh,
she's here.
so many. Okay,
Perfect. Thank you.
super. There's so many people on the call. I wasn't sure. So, for those of you who've had the opportunity to meet Zoe Martin, your life was made the better for it. And this is a thank you and a shout out. Zoe was our summer intern. That's a part of a program that's run through Notre Dame University. And LH1 Collective received the awesome opportunity to work with Zoe for a full-time, 40 hours a week summer internship. And Zoe will be now returning back to her full-time duties as a full-time student for her senior year to finish out her Notre Dame undergraduate degree. While she was with us, I just want to share a few things that she was actively a part of. She worked with our RareX data collection program, helping us to get that more organized and promoting it. She attended the MitoMed conference and got to meet some of you at that venue, which was, since we didn't have an LH1 specific conference this year, that was a super opportunity to have some in-person time, because the rest of this internship has been a remote. So this gave her some of that LHON awesome flavor. And in addition, she's been able to come to quite a few of our Zoom events, including some of the LH1 Lives. So that's been another way that she's gotten to know many of you who are on this call today. And just to share with you, she's been an active and additive part of a number of our committees, including the Grants Committee and the Advocacy Committee. She's been working with the LH1 Conference Committee as well for next year's conference and getting aspects organized and ready to go. She's been working with Dr. Amy Koch, who's also on this call today, who on a couple different research projects. So as you can see, as we are going down this list of things, and the list can go on and on and on, Zoe's had a very diverse set of activities that she's been working with us, including social media and our current website, in addition to work on the improvements and the rollout of the new website that's coming. And I wanted to say thank you. Thank you so much, Zoe, for all that you've done. It's been a pleasure to work alongside you. You've been professional and positive and had great input and experience. And so just wanted everybody to to know how much we as a community have benefited from Zoe's participation. And I wanted to say thank you on our LH1 live call for all that she's done in between her junior and senior year, committing to our rare disease as a part of the rare disease program that is run out of Notre Dame University. So thank you so much, Jessica, for the time to say that. And this is it. Zoe's last day was yesterday, so she's just attending to because she's, as I said, awesome. So thank you so much.
Second that,
Zoe, we
thank
are
you.
all wildly cheering. So
Woohoo!
yes, thank you very much. Absolutely wonderful. It's been so nice to get to know Zoe, and y'all, she's everything that Melinda just shared, and just an absolute joy to be around, but also just got things done so fast. So we wish you all the best in your journey, and happy senior year to you. And we can't wait to see where you go next. So thank you so much, Zoe.
Thanks, Zoe.
Thank you. And thank you all so much for having me. It's been awesome to meet all of you and collaborate with various members of you on different projects over the summer. I've really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thanks for
Awesome.
your
Well,
help, Zoe. It was great meeting you through fundraising calls and meeting you in person in Orlando. And I could wish you good luck, but I have full faith that you're going to do amazing things. I mean, you already have this summer, so thanks for your help.
love it, love it. Awesome. Well, thank you, Zoe. All right, next up, on to our main topic. So really, obviously, if you guys can tell how excited I am, I feel like I can't even speak. But so I think one of the coolest things about our community is that like there are so many ways to be able to jump in, give back, but also be part and just collaborate. And that's one of the coolest things. I mean, gosh, we see it literally every single month in this call where we all kind of be able to give that the tips and tricks and advice and really kind of rally around anyone that needs it and just being able to share stories that we all kind of learn and grow from. So I think that's one of the coolest things about it's one of the coolest things about this community and why we're all here today. So appreciate you all being here. I had the opportunity to get to meet Amy actually at a conference. I sat right down right next to her, and we had some delicious dry chicken at conference, and it was wonderful. But it was so wonderful to get to know Amy, and she has made quite the impact within our community. And so, Amy, I'll pass it to you to kind of share what amazing things are you doing in our community, and what have you learned that you'll be able to share with us here today?
Hi, well, thank you so much for having me. Some of you I've met many times and been on Zooms with, and some of you I've met at conference. My first conference was in Cleveland in 2024. So a little about me. My name's Amy Koch. I am a nurse practitioner, and I also am faculty in the School of Nursing at Duke University School of Nursing. I have typically done a mix of teaching nursing and research, along with practice. And a lot of my research has been with vulnerable populations. And for many years, that included children who were at the end of their life and the interactions between the healthcare system and the parents, or the healthcare system and the children. That's what I did. I studied that a lot. And then I would, interview parents, interview healthcare providers, doctors, and see what was that relationship like, and how can we as healthcare providers do better for patients? What were we missing that was pretty pivotal to the way that we can provide good care, patient-centered care? And so I've done that for like a decade, and then in February 2024, my daughter, who was, how old was she at the time? She was not yet 15, received some a genetic report indicating that she has 11778 mutation. And so that day in February was the first time I ever heard of LHON. It's not something I learned about in school. It's not something I've never had a patient with LHON that I had known of. And so this tipped me into a whole different kind of exploration. I was finishing up one of my studies on children with complex health conditions and the hospitalizations, and I felt like it was a good time for me to pivot from that work into continuing work with people, vulnerable patients in the healthcare system. And so my focus really has been driven into learning more about LH1 and getting the information of the patient's experience to the healthcare providers or to the, medical teams. My brother, who is in his 40s now, when he was 25, he lost his vision. And my mom's brother, my uncle, also, when he was in his 30s, lost his vision, but it was never attributed to anything except a different eye disease we have in our family. And it's not unlike many of the stories that I heard at conference, or heard at the beginning of my journey. I thankfully met Lissa very, soon after diagnosis, and started to hear more about this sort of prolonged diagnostic journey. So for many people, it wasn't straightforward with, oh, you've been impacted by some vision loss. Oh, let's get you tested for LHON. Typically, I was hearing stories about how it was a very long, painful, stressful event in life that lasted a long time, may have included hospitalizations, plasmapheresis, lots of steroids, and whatnot. And then finally some genetic testing, maybe weeks, months, years later. This is a rare disease, so it's really hard for the healthcare providers if they don't know about it, if they don't know how to, test for it, then it doesn't happen. So anyway, that's a little bit of my background of why I got into studying LHON. I have been collaborating for the last couple of years with Lissa and Melinda and multiple other people, and some of you on this call now. And I created, well, together we all created a study, and I'd like to go over that study with you all today. I have a PowerPoint, but I'm going to read off what I have on the PowerPoint, but it's a PowerPoint that I used to present in an international conference recently to help try and get, more information out about LHON to help expedite diagnosis and to help link patients through their healthcare provider with resources in such a way that the transition hopefully is smoother than many people have had it. So I'm going to share my screen, and if there'll be time for questions later, or if you're wanting to ask something, I am totally fine with you jumping in. I'm going to share my screen, and so the title of the talk that I gave was "Becoming Blind: Innovative Nurse Case Management for Improved Outcomes." And this study, the intern we had, we just heard about Zoe, wonderful things about Zoe, but the intern we had before, Tim, was a big part of this study as well. And he took some of the findings and he presented them at Nanos in a poster. So that was another way that we could really get more information out about LHON and things that we can start doing. So a background, because many people when I was presenting weren't aware about LHON. So as we know, it's a rare mitochondrial disease that can cause sudden severe central vision loss. Individuals may not know they have the genetic disease until they or a maternal family member become affected or have the genetic testing done. There can be shock and distress that can follow this sudden vision loss, impacting mental and physical health. And diagnosis often occurs following an extensive diagnostic odyssey or that journey, culminating with genetic testing and neuro-ophthalmology visit. Individuals affected by LHON have multidisciplinary needs requiring support, training, resources, technology to reestablish aspects of daily living. Depending on, you know, what stage people are in life. As we know, some people are still in high school, or some people are in college, or in their career. So there are different technology aspects that are necessary for people, depending on where they are. Okay. All right. So this study that I created was to explore the patient experience of the LHON diagnosis. I wanted to know, what was it like? How do people navigate this, this emotional time, the information that they're getting or not getting, and clinical aspects of the LHON diagnosis? And I wanted to hear about it through the individual's experience, because that's the best way for us as healthcare providers to really augment the way we work with patients, or the way we bring ourselves to the interaction with a patient, is to know from their voice their experience. And we often in science use qualitative studies. So that sort of a study list having specific questions or generalized questions, and having patients or individuals tell us in their own words about their experience, whatever the questions are. And then we accumulate the data and code it and find different themes. So that's what we did here. I wanted to identify any recommendations to better provide optimal diagnostic communication, support services, and long-term management. So I collaborated with the LHON Collective. We partnered together and worked on this study. This was IRB approved, and that's important for any study that you're part of, that any of us are part of, if the study's wanting to know our experience or our symptoms, because having institutional review board review, so this IRB review, says this study is safe to implement with humans. So we have to have that IRB to get that approval. Yes, this is safe to move forward with. And if we want to publish research, it's important to have whatever data collection or whatever questions we're going to ask, whatever the study is, to be approved by the IRB so that we can publish it. And so that people reading these scientific journals can read it and improve their interactions with us. The study included focus groups, which were Zoom interviews. There, for some people, it was an individual interview on Zoom, and for some people, there were 4 to 5 people in their focus group. Their inclusion, everyone had to be an adult, over 18, and in the United States. Now, this was a little source of contention for us as the study team, because we really wanted to extend to our Canadian friends as well, or anyone really in our study. But the IRB said, no, we don't want this to be international. Just keep it the United States. So we had to abide by that. Other inclusion criteria included people who could speak English, because the focus groups and interviews were in English. And then the other inclusion criteria was being affected from LHON vision, with vision loss, bilateral vision loss. So our questions were, we had five major questions that we asked in. They were, can you please tell us about your diagnosis process, the diagnostic process? What do you wish had been different about your diagnosis process? How has LHON impacted your daily life? How has your diagnosis impacted your employment or education? And what has been the most helpful for you since your diagnosis? So those are very broad questions that we, you know, however people answered was super helpful. And then we took the data, those transcripts from our focus groups and interviews, and de-identified them. So we didn't know who had said what. and we put them into a software called NVivo, and that helped us code the data in this software. So we could read through and say, oh, here is a theme about a diagnosis, or here's a theme about the education, or a theme about mental health, a theme about loss. And so we had this code book that we looked at all of our data, all of the transcripts, everything that people had said, with this inquisitive eye and this inquisitive nature in trying to gather out the data that would help providers provide better care, essentially. All right, so moving on to our results, which is much more fun than anything I just talked about. But our results, we had 27 people in our study. 18 were male, 9 were female, and ages were 25 to 91. Becoming affected for our participants was between 10 and 58 years old for male participants, and that means so the average was about 28 years old. And for females, it was 24 to 80, and actually 89 years old for female participants. And the mean, so the average age of becoming affected for our females was 45. And the inclusion criteria was that you had to have LHON and be affected. And the majority of our participants had the mutation, the variant 11778. That was 85% of our participants, and then 4% had 14484, and then we had 2 participants with 3460, and then 1 person was not quite sure about their mutation. So these I also have some charts on here showing 18 males and 9 females, and the median or mean age of when they became affected. So, more of the results, the findings, and this is certainly a part that I love as a researcher, is I usually put our themes into these buckets, and I like to call them buckets because I'm like, these were the groupings. And so we had 3 major groupings, and I'm going to go over the first one, and then I'll let you know what I'm going over the second and the third. And this is all based on what participants told us. So the first theme was impact of blindness on daily living. In that theme, there were sub-themes of injury in a sighted world, barriers to human connection from lost facial recognition, entrapped by transit. So this inability to drive as a major inhibitor of independence. Some quotes that I'll read is from these is one participant said, "I just can't see you, and that is what crushes me. The perception that I'm, an expletive, but it's not, it's just because I can't see you." So talking about that hardship of not being able to see a face or recognize someone from across the street, that is really difficult. Some people talked about, falling on a curb or down the stairs, there were, or, getting burned on a stove. So there were many aspects of injury. And then other aspects of transit, if people were using Uber or Lyft, although super helpful, there was a big cost, a financial burden to utilizing such resources. So that was our first major theme. Our second major theme was the impact of sudden severe vision loss on mental health. In that theme, we talked about the trauma and turmoil of vision loss. Another sub-theme was, what can I do? Who am I? Because of the changes that people had experienced and needing to, pivot in their life for different jobs or different education or different cities to live in. And then navigating the emotional landscape of vision loss. A couple quotes for this theme. So this is all de-identified, but some things that patients or the participants talked about was there's a fundamental trauma you're not going to get over. It's going to stick with you. So after this sudden severe vision loss, and another quote from a participant was, "I continue to go eliminate, 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 eliminate. I can't do those things." And another participant had a pretty profound quote that I think we can all relate to on this call is, "The LHON community is what saved me." And wait, isn't that the truth, at least in my experience? And then our final major theme for this, in one of these studies, was for this ma study was experiences with and perspectives on the healthcare system. A lot of participants expressed the disbelief or dismissal when they were talking with healthcare providers about this sudden change in vision, this loss of vision. And it was met with, you know, maybe you're making it up, or your eyes look fine to me. There were a lot of this disbelief and dismissals. Another sub-theme was the long, painful road to clarity. And another is diagnosis without direction, gaps in provider support, and the burden of self-advocacy. Some quotes from our participants from this category was, "This can't be happening to you because you're older and you're a female, and the literature doesn't support that." That was experience of one of the females in our study during her diagnosis, where providers didn't quite believe her, and they said, "Well, it can't happen to you because you're, you know, a woman and you're older." And then another participant said, "There was no plan for me. You get diagnosed with cancer, you got a plan. You get specialists coming in, and this was just like, that's it, you're done." Another participant talked about they didn't provide any information whatsoever. It felt like they just said, "Here's your problem, good luck," and shooed me out the door. A lot of our participants talked about how in this support and this the guidance is how much the LHON community, Lisa, Facebook page, groups like this that we're on right now, provided them information and was such a support that they were able to better advocate for them, for themselves, for ourselves. So that was super helpful to hear. And you know, it's helpful for me every day. So our findings, this is finishing up our findings here, but after reading through all of the data, combing through, finding the theme, saying, okay, how does this relate to what everyone else has said? What we found is there are lengthy and difficult diagnostic odysseys. So there's a diagnostic journey. It was lengthy and difficult for many people. There was this skepticism and disbelief of patient experience by the medical community. And why that was so important to hear from the individual's perspectives is that's something we in the medical community can work at actually changing, is sort of believing our patients, believing people when they state that they are experiencing something. We also found that there was, for many people, this lack of empathy or objectification of the patient due to the rare disease. In fact, my daughter, you know, I was telling a couple people earlier on this call, we were on Monday at Will's Eye Clinic in Philadelphia, and one of the doctors called in two fellows, and they said, "Come here, here, you're not going to see this often." So didn't even ask my daughter for like consent or is she okay with these two random people coming in the room. But they were just like oogling over the OCT, you know, images on the screen, on the computer screen. So this sort of, you know, I think all of us probably have experienced that in one way or the other, this sort of objectification of the patient. And although it's super important to be exposed as a healthcare provider to diseases, especially rare diseases, so we can become educated, it's important for us to think about talking with the patient or the individual or the family and saying, "I, you know, we don't see this often, and I'm sorry you're going through this. Is it okay if I bring in two residents because I want to teach them about this for future patients?" You know, that sort of language comes off for many patients a little more friendly and less objectifying than like, "Oh, come look at this," and just focusing on the computer screen. Another finding we had is positive experience when providers were proactively engaged. There were quite a few people who talked about their neuro-ophthalmologist or a provider that they had who was really invested, who would answer the phone, who would answer questions, who would spend a long time in the clinic with them. And so they didn't feel like they were alone. Participants had this positive experience with some providers. There was also a finding that there is a general lack of awareness about LHON, and that's nothing I have to elaborate on. We all know about that. And then there are gaps in coordinated care and continued support post-diagnosis. This is something that came out, and I was not I as the researcher was not attuned to this. This was And I mean, I understand it, but it was a little surprising to me. And I thought, oh my goodness, this is also something that maybe we can do something about, this gap in coordinated care and that continued support post-diagnosis. And lastly, another finding is the participants left responsible for coordinating their eye health, their physical health, necessary support services, rehabilitation, O&M, physical therapy, whatever it was. There was a lot of burden put on folks, individuals, to manage all of that because there was no coordinated care person. Impact on daily life, I touch on a little bit here. I don't need to touch on it in depth with you all because we all live it. But when I presented to this at this international conference and anywhere, I want to express like there is a big impact on our lives. Yes. We can still, many of us can still use a computer. However, we need to have certain technology on that computer so that we can see the words, the letters on the screen. However, I have an image up on my PowerPoint right now of my brother. He said he gave me consent to use it, but it's him using a very large monitor and he's very close to the screen. And some of us, have talked about that closeness to the screen and how it can cause some neck pain, back pain, and like a lot of discomfort, especially because you have to be, nose to the screen for some people for long periods of the day. So I also talk with the people when I'm presenting this presentation about the major impacts on daily life, like transportation, home, what it's like with the home. At work and socially, and that there are mental health challenges, which we know are a factor when people experience a loss of vision. And then difficulty navigating the healthcare system, that we as healthcare providers need to be alert to injuries that can happen when more often when people have lower vision. And then I was expressing to people I was presenting to that. People who lose their vision have to relearn or learn new methods to complete daily activities. It's so there's a lot of learning that has to take place, unfortunately, and that's another reason a lot of support is needed. Based on what we are, oh, I'm just gonna have to, I'm sorry, I'm gonna have to pause for one second because my daughter is driving home and she just is calling me right now. So I'm just gonna pause right here. I'm so sorry.
You know, perfect. While Amy's pausing, well, I was like, I'll start gathering questions. Anyone have any thoughts, feedback, comments, quick for Amy while we wait for her to come back?
She's back.
She's too fast
Oh,
for you.
okay,
Oh,
yeah.
that's fast. Just like that.
She said, "Oh, I'm so sorry, I forgot." But she's on her way home. Okay, so sorry about that.
Well,
So,
no, look.
Thanks to all this wonderful data that the participants and some of us might be on this call right now, and I am forever grateful, gave, we were able to publish two papers already from this data. And one of the papers was Navigating Health When Sudden Blindness Occurs, the Experience of Labor Hereditary Optic Neuropathy. And then in this paper, we talk a lot about yes, the adjustments have to be made, and what can we as healthcare providers do to help with this navigation? And then the other paper we presented on or we published was the Patient Perspectives and Gaps in Care for Vision Loss Due to Labor Hereditary Optic Neuropathy, a qualitative study. So these papers not only help us on this call, or those of us who experience, LHON with vision loss, it's also these are amazing papers because anytime any scientist types in LHON in the in online or in our library of scientific journals, these studies can pop up for them. So they might be looking for something else about LHON. However, they'll see papers like this saying, oh, the patient experience, what's that like? Or navigating health when, experiencing LHON, hopefully they want to read that to say, how can I improve? Oh, they may not have even known that we experience things differently than the way they are presenting them. So that's why this kind of qualitative study, these papers are so important in our healthcare system. All right. So what we said was, my implications for the healthcare team. This is what I tell all healthcare providers. We need to believe patients. We need to listen to them, no matter what kind of patient. But specifically, I was talking about people with LHON. Recognize that rapid progression vision contributes to depression and anxiety, and refer to mental health provider. We also want to encourage support. Supporting access for assistive technology, community support. Participants often had to seek out the support and trainings themselves in this study while also being newly blind. So that's a lot to have to juggle. And we want healthcare providers to proactively provide resources to individuals and then connect patients to a nurse case manager to improve outcomes after experiencing sudden vision loss. And of course, last on this slide, I have direct patients to the patient advocacy group, LHON.org, that we all know and love. But this is super important, this sort of connecting a patient to a nurse case manager. Now, this is not perfect yet, but what we are hoping for, and this study team, is that we can work together with insurance companies, neuro-ophthalmologist offices to create positions for a nurse case manager or a social worker, somebody to help once diagnosis happens to connect the people who are diagnosed with services with the healthcare team so that we're not just diagnosed and say, okay, I'll see you next year. Good luck, so that it feels like someone is there walking through this with us in the healthcare side. So there was, I'm going to give a big shout out to this slide for Melinda and Tim, who helped create this slide. But this was our, at Nanos, a slide used on our poster, an image used on our poster, talking about the nurse case manager and how the multifaceted needs of an LHON patient can be met while maintaining clinical efficiency for a neuro-ophthalmologist. We advocate that if we had a telehealth nurse case manager, then that can actually reduce some of the work of a neuro-ophthalmologist so that we can maintain connection with patients and maybe complete paperwork, FMLA paperwork, or referrals and whatnot. So the neuro-ophthalmologist doesn't necessarily have to do that, but we still get it done with a nurse case manager. And that nurse case manager we would like to have can offer emotional support, access to mental health resources, provide medical referrals because we have other symptoms. It's not just vision loss. There are many other symptoms that might happen. And that doesn't even include LHON plus, which is something, that we also have to juggle. And then coordinate care among various physicians, genetic counselors, other medical providers. And we would love this telehealth or in-person nurse case manager to connect to LHON community, vocational rehab, education accommodations, and assistive technology. So, Tim, our intern, I have a slide here which has a QR code on it. And on that QR code, we presented this to the neuro-ophthalmologists and a bunch of nurses. And that QR code takes the person, if they scan it, to a document that talks about how to call an insurance company and ask for a nurse case manager if your insurance company has that. And this provides patients, individuals with guidance to calling their insurance provider, requesting case management, asking their assigned nurse case manager for help to coordinate multifaceted needs. Healthcare needs and other needs, and then prioritizing care needs to be pursued in partnership with one's nurse case manager. I am happy to send this document link to Jessica, and I'm sure she can send it out to out to everyone. And I think that is my last slide, so I'm going to stop sharing. As part of this study, other things came out, right? When I do research, other things come out. One thing I did not know about because I have not lived it was the pain, the strain on a person's body when utilizing technology, like being so close to the screen and whatnot, and the way you have to hold or move your head. For some people in the community, that was a factor, and for some it wasn't. So I worked with a group of engineering students at Duke. I put a call out and a group of engineering students at Duke to create a prototype of a computer arm to hold a monitor to move it around in such a way that it can relieve some of the strain on a person's neck head, but still get the monitor close to the person. I feel like we were almost there, and then these four students I was working with graduated. But we have a really great prototype. However, the computer monitor with the size that we wanted it to be keeps sagging. So I have applied to have another round of engineering students this fall to see if they can help fix this issue so that we can potentially have a computer monitor arm that is like a swivel in such a way that we can move it to hopefully reduce some of that neck pain, back pain, and whatnot, and still, be as productive, if not more productive, on our computers. So that's just a little side note in something that came out of this study that hopefully will be tangible soon. I don't know how soon it will be tangible, but something that we can utilize. So I just talked a lot. I'm sorry that was a lot of my voice, but I'm happy to answer any questions. If you have ideas, I'm happy to hear your ideas. If you're like, hey, this is something that might be helpful in the science, I'm happy to do that too. We are hoping to do some LHON plus work because I am very interested in that as well. We have a great LHON plus group. Paul's on here and some other folks. So that's slowly underway. Thank you all for listening.
Okay.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Amy. I was like, there's so much good information.
Thanks.
I'll open it up. I hear a couple people kind of chatting in. Do you guys want to ask any questions?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
This is John Benson from Washington State. I've been a disabled American veteran for 40 years, not vision related. 6 years ago, I woke up and couldn't see myself in the mirror. I can't overstate how helpful the VA healthcare system has been with my vision loss. For anyone that happens to be a veteran,
That's great.
they're fantastic and have been fantastic ever since.
That's awesome. Thank you
John,
so
thank
much.
you. Yeah, thank you, John. You know what? And Melinda can probably speak to this a little bit because she was in the focus groups with me, but that is 100% what the information any of our participants who were also part of the VA or had service related, any sort of service, that is what I heard as well. Very supportive. And they have case managers that the VA utilizes in different resources. So I really like their model, and they seem to be doing a pretty good job.
South of Seattle, there's the Blind Rehabilitation Center that's based on the VA healthcare system. And it's an amazing facility. That was a wonderful presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, John. I just took down that information. I really appreciate it. I'm going to look into it.
Amy, thank you so much. This is Megan Davidson. One of the questions that I had for you as you were presenting all of this was so concise and so valuable. Are you going to do follow-ups at all with any of your focus groups to see how life has changed, since this focus group a couple years ago?
That is a really good question. I would be happy to do that. I wonder Thinking about that is like, what questions would we want to know? I would think questions along the lines of, like you said, how has life changed? And what have you learned that would be helpful for the community or for healthcare providers? Is there anything else that you could think of?
Right. So, if you're in high school, were you able to continue your education to where you wanted it to actually be in life? Where did your career land? Are you doing everything that you wanted to do? The point that you made in regards to fellows being in the clinic room with you, I can count on top of my head 4 or 5 times in very nice hospitals where a fellow has been there and has said, "Oh my God, I've never seen this before." And I basically laugh and say, "You're welcome." So yeah, just experiences like that to follow up on. And I'm sure we can think of others.
Yeah, I would love to touch base with you again. Thank you for that input. I think it would be really valuable. Yeah, great questions. That's what we call a longitudinal study. If like we had the same people and followed somebody, year after year, every 5 years, that longitudinal study, and that's something that is not in the literature right now. We don't have a longitudinal study about lived experiences of people with LHON that I have seen. Now, it might be out there somewhere, but of all the ones I've read, I've not seen it. But Lissa has read way more than I have, I am sure. But thank you, Megan. I love that. I will touch, look into that a little bit.
Thanks again.
Hey, this is Chris and Nicola. That was a great presentation. I found myself nodding my head along during the whole thing. I wanted to kind of piggyback on the thing Megan just said about doctors not knowing about it. I'm pretty sure I'd heard you speak about maybe educating just ophthalmologists more, because I was kind of shocked. I mean, it took about 4 to 6 months for me to get my diagnosis, and going through four different ophthalmologists who had never even broached the LHON until I went to a neuro-ophthalmologist. And I think educating the ophthalmologist community as a whole on LHON would be huge for people in the future that unfortunately have to deal with this, but that it would be really would reduce the time to get a diagnosis.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And that's what we're hoping for, the more literature that's out there. But I just saw one of our friends on this call, Rob Packard, who I thought, oh, you know what, Chris, that might be really interesting is if we did like a little video for ophthalmologists about like a really short video for ophthalmologists and just like tried to spam it on their, I don't know, whatever Instagram they use for ophthalmologists, like, something popular for them so they can see it, or how can we get that out to ophthalmology schools? Something really short to just give more information, because the more ways we can deliver it, both reading, teaching, a video, that those might be helpful. And
Yeah.
I tend,
Yeah, you get presented at a conference of theirs or
yeah.
yeah.
Amy, it's Paul Laurie. The American Academy of Ophthalmology, AAO, would be the starting point for that, probably.
That sounds good. I'll look into it.
And thank you for mentioning that. And I'd be happy to get together with the group and come up with I mean, beyond our LHON.org, LHON collective that we already have, I mean, and spreading that out there, and anything further we can do, I'd be glad to put together and work with us. Thank you. One thing I've been curious about, when I was diagnosed, down the road, I looked back and I wished that the hospitals I went to had an advocate for low vision blind, for someone newly diagnosed, to help them on the course and the path. So it's not just a you're legally blind and here's your paperwork and best to you, and we're here. Did you find hospitals that might have an advocate for people who are newly blind, low vision?
The only ones that's a really good point, Rob. Thank you for sharing your experience too. The
Yeah.
only hospitals that did have that. The in the study that I can remember, this maybe I'm missing one, but I don't think so, was the VA.
The VA. Okay. That was my other question, is I wonder what the VA did that stood out that was great. And so that's one of them there. So,
Yeah, they seem to like call people, have the telehealth, say, oh, here's a CCTV, here's the how you use the iPhone. Really not it's from our participants, was just a few people. And so, John, if you have anything to add, it was that the participants with the VA didn't have to go seek out assistance. It like came to them.
Wow.
That's excellent. I mean, it's hard enough to, you're handing your phone to other people, you haven't figured out, you don't even know what voiceover is and all of these things, and now you're on your own to try and find the right help. And you know, we're the ones that found our way to a great group here, but how many others get just lost and maybe years go by, and it would be a great way to save time. I think it took me about, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 months or so, maybe, before I figured out that Michigan had a state bureau. And, some say I figured it out pretty quickly, but for me, it felt like it took forever. So, yeah, that would be a great addition. One question I was wondering is, of the people in the study, were you able to see how many lost their employment, or maybe down the road were able to regain employment, or how that affected?
Yeah.
I may have missed it. Sorry if I did.
No, that's a really good question. I did not collect the statistic as to how many people lost or regained employment. We did talk about employment and the challenges with employment, and kind of the workarounds with employment. Some folks were employed and some folks were not. It was difficult to
Yeah.
continue to be employed.
It's probably hard to calculate because, I mean, people are at so many different levels at any given point in their lives, so it's hard to get a real number on that, I guess.
Yeah, but I
But
think you bring up a good point, Rob, that I think that would be a bigger, a different study. You know, a study purely about employment and those who, you know, have, and it doesn't have to just be with LH1, it could be with some other eye conditions too, what that was like. And I think Megan's point to this longitudinal. What was it like, you know, based on how many years were you able to stay with your company for a couple of years? And then they're like, you know what, I can't do this anymore. You know, so I think there is potential for a study like that to inquire about employment, but I
yeah.
haven't, you know, we haven't done it yet.
Sounds good. You didn't, was there a, it's really hard to, people will talk about triggers and what may have caused. It's probably hard to calculate, or I'm not sure if that could have been even, because there are so many potential triggers and things like that, and, or maybe even none. Sometimes it just happens. So I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Did you learn anything on that?
You know, you're right. It's really challenging to know, was it you know, a car accident? Was it eating something? Was it, you know, like it was
Yeah.
it a certain vitamin B12? We just don't know. There, we don't know enough yet.
Right.
It's so hard. I wish we did know, you know. I wish we knew more. Yeah, even though, you know, just this past Monday when, you know, we were at the eye doctor, they're like, asking my daughter, do you smoke? Do you drink? She's like, no. And then that was it. It was just those questions, you know, like that's what we have. So
Sure.
you're right. We need more, but we're not there quite yet.
Right.
That would be a
I've
really
kind of.
interesting study too, to say, what, you know, what do you think caused it? Because some people kind of have an idea, potentially.
I've come to terms with the fact that I will never know. I
Yeah.
mean, you just don't know. So, but there are so many, it can be spontaneous. Or, you know, to recover, or to get your symptoms. So it's, yeah, it's probably a question that we may never really fully know with everyone. So thanks. Great presentation, by the way. Thank you. And I would absolutely love to be part of making any kind of videos with the group and to get that out to optometrists.
Yeah. Awesome.
Thanks.
Thank you, Rob.
This is Mark from Seattle, and I had a question. I think I heard you mentioned something about other health problems. What kind of other things are associated with LHON?
Yeah, that's a good question. So in my research, and Lisa, Melinda, anyone, Paul, you know, feel free to speak up because we're all in this together. We in the science, we've learned that there could be some cardiac involvement, so we want to be sure to get an EKG. We could have, you know, sometimes people with CLOTS may have more migraines or tremors or other symptoms, hearing loss. Thank you. Hearing loss. Even some GI stuff. There, you know, I've been reading a lot of literature about combined symptoms with LHON and something else, you know. And so I just read two articles about a person who has LHON and lung cancer, but they've never smoked. But it's so hard to say if they relate or if they correlate, because it could be, you know, that could have happened to really anyone else, you know. So it's really hard to tease out. So there, the more case studies, you know, when a doctor or somebody writes up a case, then we learn more. So we may see a person with what we've seen a lot are some little lesions on the brain that we think are, you know, don't affect somebody at all, and they have LHON. So it's like, what, you know, what is this? And so we're just, the more work that's put out there, the more we can kind of clump things together to say, oh, look, this keeps happening more frequently in people with LHON than in the general population.
And Amy, that's why the DCP, you know, is so important to our community.
Yes. Do we want to, if maybe can we talk about that for a minute, Paul, if you, or Melinda, if you're on, or Lisa, of this registry, why it's so important?
I see Melinda on it, and I would let her speak first. There you go, Melinda. You're off mute. Go ahead.
Hi, y'all. Yes, I'd love to share just a little bit about that. For anyone new on this call who's not familiar, the data collection program is a medical registry, and that's what Paul is referring to when he said the DCP, and that's specifically for LHON. And it's a website that I'll have Lisa share afterwards, because I'm on my telephone, is lhon.rare-x.org. And I can walk anyone through that, and please feel free to reach out to me through our Facebook global group or email. My email's mmarsh@lhon.org. I'd be happy to talk to you. What that medical registry does is it collects information from the head to the toe. So it asks, do you have vision loss? Do you have migraines, which might be something to do with a plus symptom that we were just mentioning, or do you have any other symptoms? And based on that, those symptoms may or may not be related, but to have a greater understanding of what all of the symptoms are, if we can find some commonality and something that's far greater in our population than in the general population, that's an opportunity for scientists to then begin to substantiate what's truly LHON plus versus what is just a complementary or additional symptom that someone has. And it also allows for researchers with the optic nerve, and the vision loss is one of the main symptoms that we focus on, to have everyone in one place. So the this data collection program is open to anyone who's a carrier, who may still have their vision and just plus symptoms, or only a carrier with no symptoms, as well as those who are affected with vision loss. Currently, we have about 250 participants who filled out their data. And one plug there is, if you have filled out your data, but it's been more than a year, I'd really encourage you to go back in and re-up your data, because that longitudinal study that Amy was referring to, this is the opportunity for that information to actually have different touch points to see where your health is going, and how we can provide that natural history to those researchers in the future. And if there are other questions, I may need to log off. So I would ask that Lisa or Paul, if you could answer any questions about the DCP that may come after I'm off, I'd so appreciate it. And Amy, you're very well-versed on the DCP as well. I don't want to leave you out of that mix of people who could answer questions that someone might have. Thank you for the invitation to talk about that.
Thanks, Melinda.
Well, I have a question, I guess, about that. I'm about three quarters of the way through all the surveys on RareX. Would that be, Melinda was just saying to re-up your stats every year. Would that include going through the surveys again, or just like re-upping your like general information and whatnot?
So that, just to answer that specific question and any others that come up right at this moment, I'm still on a call. There's a specific list that I can send, because there are a lot of surveys, and RareX, because this is not specifically only for LHON, it's a medical registry that deals with a lot of rare. We've made a curated list of questionnaires so that it's not so overwhelming on the number of questionnaires that one needs to fill out. And those are the ones that our researchers have actually shared with us, that when they are doing research on LHON are the primary questionnaires that they are going to complement and work with the data for our disease. And we also have other optic nerve diseases that are also on the RareX platform. So they are working on a basket aspect with the diseases where optic neuropathy and others are concerned, to have greater shots on goal, greater scientific learnings that could possibly benefit a larger cohort, and then have greater interest by the biopharmaceutical community, because we're not such a small group anymore when we join forces. So yes, and the short answer, Chris, from the email that I sent you, answer those specific questionnaires and prioritize that.
Gotcha. You have okay.
Prior to your next semester starting, and you feel like answering all of them, I would never dissuade you, but I also want to value your time. And so prioritize the ones that are of greatest interest to the researchers that work on LHON specifically.
Well, thanks. I'm most of the way done anyway.
So you're right. Well, so,
yeah. Yeah, more information is good. So.
Patricia's iPhone has left the meeting alert.
Oh, we can hear something alert. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, while we were on the subject of educating folks, just thought I'd throw it out there that our San Diego conference is coming up sooner than we might realize, and I think that'd be a real cool opportunity to maybe do some kind of a video collectively on experiences, and something we could put out to optometrists around the country. Thought I'd throw that little bug out there. We'll have experts there. Oh, and yeah. All of us. So be a great opportunity to do something like that.
Great idea. Love that. I'm sure the conference ears are listening.
Nice. We're hopefully going to have a collective Instagram page going before the end of this year. And we've already been talking about that's going to be a great opportunity to get some reels or get some footage taken for future reels and whatnot. So.
Excellent.
Anyone have any other questions for Amy while she's on? Just want to be super respectful of her time. Thoughts, feedback, anything else? for Amy.
Hi, my name is Suzanne. I just wanted to say thank you for your presentation. It was amazing, and it's really true in what you said, that this group has helped me through so much of my diagnosis when I was diagnosed in March of 24. So I fully agree with, you know, we do need more support. Like, I had to find Department of the Blind in Minnesota. I had to reach out for so many different things, but this group is what helped save me and help give me so many tips and tricks. And your presentation and all of your reports are going to help so many more people. So I just wanted to say thank you.
Thank you, Suzanne.
Awesome. Anyone else? All right. Well, I'll call it a wrap there. Hi, oh, I heard someone. Yes, please go ahead.
It's me. It's Linda from Pennsylvania. Okay. I just wanted to say thank you, thank you, thank you. Doesn't seem big enough. This was so awesome and so informative and amazing. Had I known about it, I would have loved to be number 28 in the group. Should you do something like this again, please count me in. I felt like on every level I had something to contribute about the research, and I just, it's so amazing. The tiny bit I will share is that when this all happened to me, it was during COVID. And so that added a whole other element to everything. And my doctors were like so amazing. And one of the odd things was they gave me a slip to get blood work when I went, and they said, oh, you have macular pucker. How about a surgery? I'm like, sure. So I got that surgery. And then no change. And then they said, oh, you have a cataract, but it's not really that bad. And I said, okay, I'll take that surgery. So we went through this for many months inside of a year during COVID. So everything was crazy anyway. And I never, ever, ever do this, but they gave me this slip for blood work. And I went home, and for some reason, I made a copy, which I don't make copies of things that I probably should make copies of. And in retrospect, I looked at it again, and it's unlike when you get a slip to get blood work when you used to get a slip before they put it in the computer. Unlike that, there were like boxes and you check them off and everything. And I reviewed it afterwards. I don't even know why. And it said LHON. And that box wasn't checked. So I'm like, well, that's kind of crazy because I never heard of LHON. And after I was finally diagnosed and everything, I just was looking through papers and I'm like, hey, that's crazy. So I went back to the, wasn't a neuro-ophthalmologist at that time, but anyway, I went back to him and I said, hey, just wanted to let you know, I know that it's normally a male from the age of 12 to 32 at that time was what my research said. And I said, just do me a favor, because getting into some support groups, and thankfully Lisa hooked me up with my now mentor, and I learned through different avenues, you know, preliminarily about, you know, what was going on here. I said, just do me a favor, please, you know, next time we don't know that it's a cataract. We don't know it's macular pucker. Maybe she's a postmenopausal woman with headaches. Hello. You know, just maybe check that box next time. And they were like so nervous and everything. Oh, Lynn, I'm so sorry. I didn't know that you shouldn't have had the surgery, and don't be mad at me. I'm like, no, no, no. No one intentionally did anything. I just said, you know, maybe next time check that box. I mean, you're checking it for 17 other things. Why not that? And then I went back to the macular pucker guy. I went back to the cataract guy. I went back to the people at Wills. And I said, you guys, if you're checking for everything, why don't we check, like, that box? It's okay. Like, I wasn't hammering on anybody. I wasn't angry with anybody. I just thought, you know, let's all learn from this. You know what I mean? And so I wish I would have been in that study. And if you do it again, I would love to participate on so many levels. I have input, but I hope all this makes sense. But, yeah, it's just, I guess point being, it's all awareness, right? Like, people never heard of this. I've known my ophthalmologist since I was a kid, and I've learned through so many other people. They're just like, oh my gosh, we never heard of this. So maybe awareness is a thing, apparently. anyway, that's all I got. But yeah, but thank you, Amy, for your research. I appreciate you, and it's amazing. And certainly, if there's ever anything I can contribute to on that note, and yeah, I have to get some more family members to participate in sharing, even unaffected people, because when I initially heard about this at conference 2 years ago, like, my brothers were like, well, I don't have it, so why do I have to, you know, go on there? And I'm like, no, no, no. And this is the way I understand it, that the more people they get to participate, the greater chance of federal funding, as well as just gathering, like, all the information, you know, about people that are in the line of maternal beings that are out there that have other issues. It's just about gathering information. So, yeah, I have to share that with some more of my family to gather information. I'm hearing more and more is important.
Yes, thank you so much for sharing your experience. And I believe that you're taking your time out to share with your doctors that LH1 has probably positively impacted other people's lives, for sure, who've gone
through. I so hope so. And I just said, you know, please don't discount us, you know, postmenopausal women with headaches. Because at that time, you know, I had had a headache for 5 years. And I, whether that has something to do with it or it doesn't, and I've since then had, you know, CAT scans, MRIs, other things to find out what's going on in my head. But interestingly enough, there is a finding behind the eye that's the worst, that feels like a dagger is behind that many times. Anyway, so I don't know if there's a correlation there or not, but, you know, I felt like I was kind of calming the doctors down, saying, no, 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 I'm not here to, like, rip your head off. I'm not going to sue you. I'm not, because they were, like, really, really hesitant. And I'm like, no, you guys, I'm just saying, if you get a woman in here that doesn't fit the bill from 12 to 35 or whatever it was at that time, this is 5 years ago now, but, you know, just don't, just check the box. Check the box. You know, I didn't even know there was a line item on the blood work thing that was LH1. Because, you know, if you read it, it says diabetes, it says thyroid, it says cholesterol, you know, the usual suspects. But then when I was looking, I'm like, there's LH1. It was right there. And I could have been, you know, diagnosed like a year and ahead of time. But I just very friendly just said, you know, just check the box. That's all.
Yeah, I think,
and I'm just like one little person.
I think that's the beauty of, like, one, Amy's research, but then two, also obviously, like, so many things happening in the group is just the awareness is still not there. And I think kind of with the power of this community and obviously amazing people like Amy, but also other researchers and doctors, we're really kind of working towards. Oh, I can hear someone's not on mute. If you're just letting you know, but that that there really is people kind of working towards kind of that awareness. So I think, yeah, you reaching out with your doctors is wonderful. And I think we're all kind of driving towards more awareness. But Amy, I'll throw it back to you of any kind of final thoughts, and then we'll have to kind of get a wrap here.
Oh, okay.
No, thank you all so much. And thank you to everybody who has participated, because this wouldn't be a thing, even possible without your input and your experience. And I'm just going to put another plug in, even though Paul and Melinda and Lisa have, is that the data collection program is just super important. So if we each, including me, walk away today and encourage one of our family members to get on there, that would even increase the data collection program by even that much more.
Definitely. Amy, we so appreciate your time, not only for this research, but just coming here today and sharing all the information and your story. We really appreciate you popping in. Amy actually came in such last minute notice, so she totally saves the day and made this call exactly what we hoped for. So, Amy, we really appreciate it, and I so appreciate it. So thank you for being here. We'll roll and kind of talk to like what other calls are left for the rest of the wonderful month of August. And then I will do turn off the recording since we are a little bit over, and to see if anyone has anything to share off recording. Kind of cruising through August. The next call coming up is actually on Thursday, August 6th, which is tomorrow. And that's Navigating Education. And then on Wednesday, August 12th is LH1 West. Ooh, that's exciting. And then the next call for that is Thursday, August 13th. And that's LH1 Southeast Connect. These are all regional-based calls. So if you live in the area or are visiting the area, perfect calls to jump in and check out. Next call after that is Monday, August 17th. And that call is the U.S. Midwest call. Next call is Tuesday, August 18th, and that is the LH1 Spouses. Quick note on spouses is this call is actually only twice a year. So if this is something to join, please jump in because it's only twice a year. So that's awesome. Next call after that is Wednesday, August 19th, and that is LH1 Dads. And that's Dads of Affected Kids. And remember, no matter what, you're always a kid, my mom says or my dad says. Next call after that is Monday, August 24th, and that's LH1 Assistive Technology. And that is a wrap for August. So jam-packed, super fun month. Lots of regional calls, a lot of cool affinity calls, as we call them. So definitely check those out. If those kind of feel like they fit you and where you would feel most comfortable, I think that's kind of the name of the game. And that's a wrap for the LH1 Live August edition. Melissa, if you mind turning off the recording, we'll dive right into the unrecorded section.
Yep. Did you need Maria to say anything about conference, or are you good for that? And we'll go down. It's up to you. Just want to throw it out there.
Yeah. Maria, I was like, I'll happily take a conference mini promo.
I wasn't going to butt in, but thank you. hello, everyone. My name is Maria Johnson. I'm living in San Diego, and that's not the reason the conference is in San Diego. I'll just say that. Oh. But I am thrilled that our next conference is going to be in 2027 in San Diego, California. The dates are Friday, April 30th, Saturday, May 1st, Sunday, May 2nd. If you have not been to a conference before, we typically have done our conferences in combination with the UMDF conference, MitoMed or Mitochondrial Medicine. This next year, we are not doing that. We are on our own for the very first time as our solo LH1 conference. So it's just going to be us. And we have picked a wonderful hotel that I feel is just perfect for our group. It is very easy to get around, easy to navigate. We made sure of that with multiple visits. And all the information you need to register and to make your hotel reservations are at lhon.org/conference. There's a conference tab, and it's got everything you need to know about conference that we know of so far. So let me give you a couple little highlights of what you could expect. On Friday, the 30th of April, we will be having a welcome reception that evening. So you have all day to come in or sightsee or whatever you want to do in San Diego. We go right in on Saturday with a full day of sessions and roundtable discussions. And then Sunday, we have basically a half day, starting early in the morning and ending around 12:30 or so. That's as of now. Again, schedule still being worked on. Again, full of sessions, networking time, and other discussions. Sunday afternoon is always, always, always a really, really fun time. In the past, conference has ended on Saturdays, and we have taken the time that the rest of that day to just hang out with each other. And this hotel has a wonderful lounge slash pool area where we can hang out that afternoon to just reconnect with old friends, connect with new friends, make new friends, talk with other LHON families. That whole afternoon, go to dinner, whatever you want to do. But it's just really going to be a wonderful afternoon to kind of decompress, but yet make those connections that you'll be able to take home with you. Anyone who's been to conference will say that although the sessions and the speakers and the panels are great, I will say, people do come away with it saying, I met amazing people who are now lifelong friends from this community. So I highly, highly, highly recommend you checking out the website, the LHON.org under the conference tab. Look at the information. And what I will emphasize to you is if you think you might want to come, is that you make hotel reservations. We do have a room block, but we do predict that supply may not last our demand. So get in there, get the good group rate. If you'd like to come a little before or stay a little after conference to hang out in San Diego, there are rooms available. Let me say that again. There will be rooms based on availability. Okay. It's based on the hotel's availability. We have nothing to do with it, but if you can possibly book, you can still get the good rate before and after the conference. But again, it's up to the hotel's availability. So get it now. Or you can always just decide to go maybe to another hotel post-conference and stay somewhere else if you'd like. Registration, of course, information is there. Register you, all your family members. And I want you to know that this conference isn't just for the affected. Although this is the largest gathering of affected individuals in the U.S. Time and time again, every conference. And if you've never met anyone who's affected or only been around one or two people, you can be around 40, 50 affected folks. Anyone who can understand how you're living your journey, it's a wonderful networking for that. But we also encourage all family members to come, moms and dads, sisters and brothers, husbands, wives, partners, because there are other people there that they can talk to as well. There's other moms, there's other dads, there's other partners and spouses who are going through things when their family member becomes affected. So there are other people to talk to as well. So there's something and someone for everyone. There really is. We typically have a really nice variety of sessions, all the way from community update, advocacy, health, mental health, the ever popular Living with LHON panel, coffee and conversation. There's going to be plenty of networking time. We have gotten that request and we are going to make as much as possible. And we will have the roundtable sessions that people do love, where we will have experts at tables where we will do a rotation and you will be able to talk at a small table with experts from various fields, scientists and doctors, clinicians, genetic counselors, possibly. Again, we are just ramping up and trying to get the agenda and inviting speakers to attend our conference next year. So keep a watch on social media. It does come out on the LHON. It is on LHON.org. We will be putting out emails. So for those that were not on social media, we will be, you know, making sure you're aware of what's going on. So again, we'd love to see all of you. We want it to be the biggest one yet, which means we got to hit a big number because we've had a pretty big attendance in the past. And again, would love, love, love to have you all come and enjoy not only our conference, but San Diego, if you can plan that out for next April 30th through May 2nd.
All right. Thanks, Maria.
Thank you, and Jessica.
That is conference 2027. Probably sound cool if Rob says it. But anyways, I think we could pause recording. Please.